can do the knowledge of the fact, like Philip says, or we can do the one with the visual aid.
So the knowledge and perspectives is text. It's very text-based, so it's about reading and kind of discussing ideas within pairs within a larger group. There's another session that we also had prepared for the kind of the second half, but since we're not going to have two halves, that's more visual aids. And unfortunately, I can't go into description because the visual aid is really kind of your interpretation of the visuals. So it's, you know, a story basically done in visual aids. So if it just depends on what people feel is going to be.
So that would then more be, about a different thing and talking about it with the procedure of this open space and for dialogue and inquiry. Well, knowledge and perspectives is also normally the session we use as the first session because it talks about knowledge and perspective. So it's kind of more related to.
So it depends on what people would want to do, how they'd rather be stimulated, so to speak.
And what people do in the first section.
The knowledge and perspectives of text, okay.
Knowledge also being in that.
Yeah, okay. Are we
in
agreement? Okay. Okay, so this first sheet, the one with the pictures on it, is kind of the procedure that we want to suggest that we use for this time. So I'm going to kind of read through it, and then what we're basically going to do is ask you if it's okay, kind of to create an agreement, and then start the safe space. So the OSCE stands for Open Spaces for Dialogue and Inquiry. This educational initiative promotes a methodology for the introduction of global issues and perspectives in an educational context. And as I said earlier, OSCE has been piloted and practiced in a number of countries over a number of years. So it's a constantly evolving process that we're kind of growing and developing. First of all, what we're going to do is we're going to discuss the basic principles and then ask you to agree to them and adopt them so that we can create a safe space together. And then we're going to go through, we will quickly describe the procedures just to kind of give you an idea of where we're headed. And on the second page, or the stapled page rather, what you'll see is kind of the actual process that we'll go through with the text that you'll read. So if you go down to proposed principles, every individual brings to the space valid and legitimate knowledge constructed in their own context. So if you want to go ahead and read that paragraph, and then we'll kind of discuss comments, if you have any comments. I'm sorry. Yes, sorry. Forgetting. Thanks for reminding me. Okay, it says, we look at the world through lenses constructed in a complex web in our context, influenced by several internal forces, such as cultures, media, religions, education, upbringing. Internal forces, such as personality, reactions, and conflicts, and encounters with relationships. The image these lenses project represents the knowledge of ourselves and of the world, and therefore, where they are close or far from what is considered normal, they have a history, and their validity needs to be acknowledged within the space. So within the space we're creating, the people's perspective needs to be.
So what we say is our principle is that every individual brings to the space valid and legitimate knowledge constructed in their own context. At the same time, of course, we would say that all knowledge is partial and complete, and therefore all knowledge should be questioned. So, with questioning, we don't mean, like I said, that we want to break the lenses or destroy the lenses that people have, but we just want to delve deeper and look at how these lenses are constructed. I mean, you have some nice cartoon here which illustrated it.
So the cartoon show, a couple people with big bags that they're carrying. Another cartoon shows two people looking at the same object but seeing different things.
Yeah, we put on something in the last space by putting
a
branch in the middle of the table.
A girl walking through a whole bunch of doors with question marks.
And of course, people sometimes say, we do see.
Critical engaging or questioning.
So of course, you all look at
her perspective, question marks.
Which makes you not seeing the whole picture, so to say. So you need each other to see the whole picture.
So, is everyone in agreement with these principles? Can anyone acknowledge that they're in agreement?
Yes.
Okay. So basically what we're going to do is we're going to start with critical engagement of an idea, which is in this case is knowledge and perspectives. The idea is to question assumptions, where do these ideas come from. Then we're going to go on to kind of some in what we call informed thinking and asking what are the dominant views about knowledge. And then we're going to do some alone time, which is reflexive questioning. Am I willing to be challenged? How willing am I to be challenged about my own perspective? Then we'll go into some group dialogue and ask them, the group will decide on a question that they want to discuss as a group. And then we'll engage in some questions about that and look at each other's assumptions. The next we'll have to say, how do we put this into action? What does this mean in terms of our daily lives? And we'll have an example of what that might, you know, a choice that you might have to make. We call that responsible choices. And then finally, a debrief where we'll ask what we've learned about ourselves, other people, and the subject. So if you want to just go to your first staple page, and what we should...
Yeah, we would need groups of people. So let's say you're with Andy, you want to be in a group or not?
Yeah, let's say.
Yeah, so So just read the different perspectives and answer the questions which are above it. What do the perspectives tell you about knowledge and the person who knows? Is it possible to agree with all of them? How does your idea of knowledge affect your role as a student, researcher, teacher, or colleague?
So if we can do that in pairs, and we'll give you maybe about 10 minutes or so to kind of go through this.
What were the questions for then?
At the very top above the quotes, the questions are there.
Sure.
Right, so I think Andy's
going to
pair up with you and
read
the quotes.
All right.
The quotes.
Kevin.
No.
Matt?
Yeah.
M-A-T-T?
Yeah.
Right on.
Sorry, I just missed the last 5 minutes.
So we're going to go through, basically read these perspectives and answer these questions. The questions at the top about these different perspectives. I'm just going to read through them now.
How does your idea of knowledge affect your needs?
Yeah, it's been recorded. I'm just going to read them out loud.
Yeah, that's cool. Good idea.
The first one, if I think that only my truth is valid, I'll close myself off to others and will not learn anything new. The right way to improve my perception and capacity to think and to hear with respect is to be open to differences and to refuse the idea that I'm absolutely right.
Mm.
If I'm not the owner of truth, I need to be permanently open. I need to be open to approach and being approached, to question being questioned, to agree and to disagree. Next one is, every age, every generation, and every culture has its built-in assumptions about reality that are generally unconscious. These assumptions invariably change with time. So if history is any guide, much about what we take for granted about the world today simply isn't true. But we're locked into these precepts without even knowing it. Next one, our brain is wired in a way that we only see what we think is possible. The brain matches patterns that already exist within ourselves through conditioning. Scientific knowledge is objective and neutral. Everything can be known and tested scientifically to produce a universal truth that is complete in itself and universal, something that anyone could see in the same way.
Okay. Thanks, Sam.
Progress and development can be achieved through the use of science and technology to control the natural environment in order to build the perfect society. Next one, don't believe anything because it's written in books, because wise men say so, or because your religious leaders tell you to. Believe it only because you yourself know it to be true. And finally, what we observe, even through scientific experiments, depends on the interpretation of the person who sees it. Like a pair of glasses we wear, each of us has different lenses to look through at the world. These lenses determine what we see as real, ideal, true, good, and bad. These lenses are constructed in our contexts, produced collectively in social interactions, in families, education, the media, religion, the government, and they're always changing. Therefore, knowledge is never objective. There's no possibility of complete neutrality. All right, first question. What do the perspectives tell you about knowledge and the person who knows?
I'm sort of struck by the sort of relativity that they're talking about, essentially, in most of these quotes. You know, it's like it's making it basically really clear that the way that we see things isn't the only way.
Mm.
Knowledge is something which is understood through your everyday experience. It's like nurture rather than nature. It's like it's a build up in our brains. It's like it's talking about this sort of network of our, which is like slowly grown by our experiences, and then that's what allows us to see stuff.
It's interesting though, it seems like there's a basic assumption, like assumption that's made that people don't think this way, right? That most people think their knowledge is fixed, that their perspective is in fact like some universal truth or something. So a lot of these quotations are like, seem to me like speak to the fact that most people don't think this way. Otherwise, it would be kind of assumed that this was all correct.
Mm.
So I wonder why we're all naturally wired to almost become fixed to our own perspective. You know?
I guess it's in a way it's important evolutionarily to have like fixed perspectives, because if you didn't, you wouldn't be able to, you know, like in terms of very simple stuff like where the bush with the berries is, or
right.
Like how you go about catching a mammoth. Like these are, you have to develop some kind of understanding about how to do that, and it's like trial error. It's like a way of, it's like, again, it's like a practical knowledge which allows you to do things.
That's also it's experiential knowledge. Like you experience that, and so you know to be true based upon your experience. So I know to go here and get the berries, you know, and I do that, so I know that's to be true, as opposed to somebody saying, oh, go over there to get the berries. You have a choice to believe that or not to believe that. When someone tells you that, you feel like you don't have experiential knowledge. So it's like, how do you negotiate that, all of those things in your life that people tell you, or you read, or you assume them to be true, maybe you assume them not to be true. How do you resolve those issues daily, I think is interesting, just about your life. What do you choose to believe to be true?
Definitely.
A lot of people choose to believe a lot to be true. Whatever they read, whatever they hear, whatever they see. I think very few people truly question most of what they hear, most of what they read.
And again, maybe that's just a practical, there's a really solid practical reason for it. Like, it's empirical knowledge, isn't it? It's stuff that you know. Because it helps you to do something. And it's like, it's got real similarities to science, actually. It's quite interesting. Like, science is all about gathering evidence for certain perspectives on how the world is. And if for science to work, people have to believe in sort of an ultimate truth about something, I think, and that's maybe partly to do with its success. Science and technology's success is based on the fact that it's like knowledge which is backed up by experiential evidence in the real world. And that's sort of, you know, it's really useful, but it's also limiting, because it's only one way of gathering evidence. It's a very visual, like it's literally sort of visual. Scientists have to be able to see something to be.
Yeah,
to feel
it's also by its very nature, it's consensual, right? And this reality, we have to agree upon this reality.
Yeah.
And so, through the scientific method, you're basically, it's a way to agree upon reality through whatever scientific method is being used. And we all agreed that the experiment, that's the outcome.
Mm.
So it's more of like that consensus, to me, gives a great deal of our consensual reality. You know, we don't have a lot of consensus about our internal, you know, our non-consensual reality. I feel good, I feel bad, whatever. There's no, like, you know, there's no evidence to support that other people can have access to. So there's an interesting external world kind of dialogue that drives a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
But you also have two different views on science, even in these two statements, right? The first one says, you know, science is objective, and neutral. Now come on in.
Right. We're basically, OSD is this open spaces and dialogue.
Right.
And we've just read through these quotes. It's like the first activity. And we're just talking about these quotes, which are about knowledge. And yeah, if you haven't read through and we'll carry on. So. Yeah, what were you saying?
There were these two different versions of science. One is science objective, neutral. This one down here talks about how even the observations from your scientific experiment, depending upon your interpretation and your perception.
Mm.
And that's true. I mean, I think it's like a priori true. Your perception is your perception. But it's to me, the agreement on perceptions, perhaps, that gives you more of an agreed upon truth. Maybe not universal truth, but at least it's agreed upon at that particular time and place, you know, or as far as knowledge is advanced or something.
I mean, I'm quite interested that, you know, there are so many varying views about what science is in terms of, like, our combined understanding, or whether it's objective, or whether it's something which can be a relative thing. I mean, because in the past, obviously, I guess what science was things like botany and stuff, and like knowledge of how plants work, and knowledge of healing plants, healing and stuff. But you wouldn't call them science anymore, because they can't generate the same kind of standards of empirical evidence which you need now. So it's like science itself has changed, and the idea of what science is, what constitutes knowledge in science, has developed into a much more precise thing, because we have better instruments to collect the data and stuff.
Well, better instruments and maybe more reproducible outcomes as well.
Yeah.
You know, so maybe the threshold keeps getting higher and higher for what we consider to be science, based upon the outcomes, the reproducibility of the outcomes, maybe.
Definitely.
But I mean, this is kind of, some of this I think is great, but it's also preaching to the choir, right? Because people who are here are generally open people.
Yeah.
And so it's hard to get like a good continuum, you know, because a lot of people are very fixed in their perspective. It's hard to get them unfixed, you know. You think of very like fundamentalist type belief.
Yeah.
Anybody who believes in a fundamentalist dogma, they're very fixed in that perspective, and they can't see other viewpoints. So I wonder why that is.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder why people, you know, can't or don't take other perspectives, you know. I think by temperament, people here are generally less fixed on their viewpoints.
Yeah, open to
new ideas and
changing,
seeking ideas even.
Yeah,
as opposed to closed off to them.
And maybe it's something to do with because it strikes me as well that knowledge, the way that we collectively. You know, agree on certain knowledgeable things is we look up to people and we assume that they know more than us, sort of thing. Mm. So we assume that the scientists have done the experiments and they do know, and you know, they've been peer-reviewed papers and stuff like that allow us, you know, some kind of authority.
Mm-hmm.
And it's definitely a very hierarchical relation.
Mm.
And maybe partly the reason why people here are more open is because they don't think in terms of that hierarchy. They're more happy in themselves to investigate themselves, things through their own experiences, rather than to sort of let some higher body dictate to them the sort of ideas and the knowledges which are sort of passed through science. Is it possible to agree with all of them?
Not really, I don't think. I mean, I was just... What I found that this one contradicts... This one claims that sort of everything is completely understandable and there's a correct way of viewing things.
Mm.
And then something like this is saying that each individual has his own thought of what's true, and I find that those two sort of really clash in that way.
Mm. and maybe this one and this one as well, because that's like scientific knowledge is objective and neutral.
Yeah.
What we observed, and then the other one's what then, we observed, yeah, depends nothing, on the interpretation of the person who sees it.
Nothing is, yeah, complete neutrality.
But is it just like a different definition of what knowledge is? Like, is it just because they're using knowledge in a different way that you get that disparity?
Well, I think that begs the question, what is knowledge? I
mean, yeah.
There's a definition, like, nobody's agreed upon it. We haven't really talked about what that even means. What is knowledge? Is
that's
it
true.
Belief? Is it, you know, like a knowledge and belief, the same thing?
It's a good question. I mean, I think that knowledge has something very strong to do with belief, but it's more like, you know, you can't certify that something is knowledge on your own. You couldn't sit in a room and know something. I mean, or would it be knowledge if you couldn't communicate it? And maybe that means that knowledge, the idea of knowledge, necessitates people communicating and being able to agree on something. And maybe, like, when you were saying before, it's sort of agreed knowledge or consensual knowledge. Maybe that's, like, agreed beliefs. Mm. Maybe that's knowledge. Because, you know, even religious people say they know God exists or something like that. And that's because they're with other people, maybe, who also agree. Or they think, they say they know that because they collectively believe in it and they have some kind of basis for that. Because,
but that argues for some kind of like complete subjective reality, like no objective realities. If we all agree, yeah, whatever, God looks like an old man in a white beard, just because we all agree, it doesn't mean that's objective truth. So is that knowledge? Is that just our fucked up, you know, belief?
Yeah.
It seems to be, I mean, this is somewhat semantical based upon, you know, language and concept, but I would say that belief to me is more of like, has less of a consensual kind of, you know, viewpoint. So I can believe whatever I want to believe, you know, but knowledge seems to be to have a higher standard of maybe provability or of like, I don't know, some greater tie to the objective reality than just maybe my internal landscape of belief.
But does that mean that there has to be a definite truth in things? I mean, does that necessitate that there is a definite truth? Because it seems to me that there's many truths to a situation. Like if you look at things in a different way, you see another aspect of the reality of that situation. And, you know, you're going to miss some things. You're necessarily going to miss some parts of the reality. And who's to say which are more true, which perspectives on something are more true than another? And I can't really get to grips with the idea of an absolute truth, because there's so much information. Like, truth is meaningless in a way if we can't access all the information about something. So, like, I mean, I'd say that those things across the wall there are made of wood, but if I wanted to describe exactly that thing up there, I'd have to sort of, maybe I'd have to know all about each tree which was cut down, and I'd have to know about how every part of it was made. And I mean, the truth about what that's made of is, you know, it's got varnish, but I could say, yeah, that's made of wood, and that seems true. But then it's also made of some nails, made of some varnish, it's made of different types of wood, different parts of the tree.
And even if you get more granular, it's made of whatever, carbon and oxygen.
Yeah.
It's made of electrons, you know, it's made of essentially energy at the end of the day, right? And even then, it's like, so you're saying, we all agree that's wood, or some concept that's called wood, so we nod our heads and say, that's wood. But if you have a higher resolution, perhaps, through which, or a higher resolution lens through which you're viewing the reality, you can say, well, it's just a manifestation of energy. So it's like at some level you have to agree upon concepts to be able to communicate.
Yeah.
And so then, if our knowledge is communicated, well, it brings up the question, which is, you know, does knowledge have to exist to be able to be communicated? Right. So you could achieve some spiritual insight, let's say, that you may not be able to communicate. You know, some sense of transcendence or bliss or something. And we use those words, right? Transcendence, but you know, that feeling that I get, or that you know, that state that I may be in, maybe beyond my ability to describe it to you. Is that knowledge, or is that just an experience?
Yeah, I think you would be knowledgeable, but then not being able to explain it. That doesn't mean that, yeah, it's not knowledge. But if you can't explain it to someone else, I don't think that means that it's not knowledge at all. I think having like an inner knowledge about something, you're still like sort of ancient tribes, you'd be a wise, knowledgeable person. The fact that you can't then pass on your knowledge, or you can't pass it on in a conversation, because it's deeper than that, is, I think, very, very key to being knowledge. It's a greater understanding of something, as opposed to just a phrase. So
we use the word knowledge. But you would say that there's, that's just, that word describes a state of knowing, a state of knowing.
Of understanding.
Yeah. That you may not even be able to communicate. Or may not be able to be communicated, or could be communicated.
You can communicate aspects of it, but I think it's also your interpretation that means that you can put it all together and work out. As Matt was saying, it's not just something you're sort of told by someone else who you regard as being knowledgeable, and you just sort of, like in a lecture, write it down and memorize it. It's you've taken all these things in and processed them and put them into your picture of the world. And through that you become more knowledgeable. That's what I feel anyway.
Yeah, it makes sense. I think we're moving on.
So let's go to the next session in 4:30, so the next day. And a short discussion with your group, only like 3 minutes, about what informs your current perspective on this topic, what shapes the mainstream perspectives available to the public, where can you find out about different perspectives, and how do you make decisions about what to talk about? So if you just go back to your group and just have 5 minutes.
I don't know what informs your current perspective, but mostly your experience in life, I would say. Like you,
I think, upbringing in particular.
Your upbringing, your parental guidance, you know, how you were raised. Ultimately, you take in information through your senses.
Yeah.
Right. So whatever your senses would lead you to understand about the world. What shapes the mainstream perspectives? And there's this huge cultural aspect too, which is culture greatly affects your perspective, your language, your preconceived notions about the world. You know, like being raised. Are you from the UK?
Yeah.
Being raised different than growing up in America. You know, your perspectives of the world are different, right?
All the pieces of information that you've taken in are completely different, because they're sort of localized knowledge that, if you lived somewhere else, you wouldn't get access to that knowledge, and your view of the world would be different.
Right. So it's like you have this internal knowledge you gather through your senses and your perceptions of reality. There's this cultural knowledge that sets the stage for you. You know, it puts you in a certain environment to speak a certain language, to grow up in a certain way, let's say. Where can you find out about different perspectives? You know, everywhere, other places, other people.
I think that's why it's important to go and find out about other cultures, because you've been living in a very sort of enclosed environment that has a particular viewpoint on the world. And unless you see it from someone else's perspective, you're only seeing sort of a really small part of it.
It's like the guy this morning was talking about that stuff in Brazil, you know, the dictatorship, and how they had to craft that, you know, mechanism for kind of group therapy that was kind of dodging the dictatorship of the time, you know, and how that would influence you. If you grew up under a dictatorship or some autocratic system, you'd be much different in your perspective.
Absolutely. And you might think of knowledge and perspectives as something which is much more fixed. And you might not have as much individual freedom to think for yourself.
Or at least always be reacting to something or much firmer structure for your reality. Last question, how do you make your decisions about what you think about it? How do you make your decisions about what you think about it? So what you think about knowledge?
Where can you find out that difference?
Yeah.
I think it's what informed your current perspective on this topic on knowledge.
Oh, I see. So perspective.
It's funny, I find that I make decisions in general when I'm talking.
Oh, verbally, yeah.
If I'm having a conversation with someone, I don't think through what I'm going to say before I say it. When I'm saying things,
clearly,
I'll when I'm saying things, like something in my brain fuses different things together, which I thought before, and my different perspectives on the topic, and it's like a process which I don't have to consciously think about. I don't have any particular sort of criteria that I follow to make those decisions. They just flow. But I think also, I mean, I know people who think on a much more logical basis, and they seem to have a much more defined system of building up to have to say something or to propose something. And I think, you know, that process is another abstracted level of how what knowledge is, because
the process of what? Of identifying your thoughts?
Of identifying what you think about
something. What you think about something, yeah.
And, you know, some people will be very considered and very thorough about what they say. Essentially, it's when you say something, that's when you state that you believe something.
What's a good point, too, just in the actual capacity different people have for different knowledge, right? I mean, intelligence, native, how you come into this world, your physical being, are you very emotional? Do you have a great memory? Can you put thoughts together quickly? Are you 10 feet tall? Whatever. That all greatly impacts your knowledge, And so everyone starts from a different starting point, it seems like, just from their native, what they're able to do. I think it's interesting. But your point about how do you, I find the same thing, that you have a lot of undifferentiated kind of, not thoughts exactly, like thought forms maybe floating around, different intuitions floating around. Then through the process of talking and speaking, you're able to bring those intuitions into thoughts, and then those thoughts into some articulated speech, which helps to fix them in reality or in time and space. And once they're fixed in time and space, it's easier to manipulate them than if they're just floating around your head.
But I mean, also the way in that model that language is used isn't the way that it seems to be. That people expect language to be used. Because people expect, I find, language to be used when you say something, you really mean every consequence of that, and you've considered how the person who's listening to you will understand it. So you get misunderstandings sometimes, and then the next step is to, for me, I'm always sort of, if someone challenges me on a point that I've made, I'm really happy to refine what I mean by it, because of course someone's if someone listens to what you say, they're never going to get exactly what you mean by it.
Sure.
They're never going to really understand exactly. Well, but sometimes
also,
they will.
And also but in the face of new evidence, though, you would update your knowledge, right?
Yeah.
I would say whatever. I'd say, this is made of wood. You'd say, no, look, it's plastic. I'd be like, oh, like, I'd be like, okay, yeah, it is plastic. I would update my understanding. But people have different thresholds for that, right?
Yeah.
A lot of people would say, no, no, it's wood. It's wood. Like, no, it's plastic. Look, it scratches. It feels like plastic. No, I think it's a special wood, you know. So I wonder why some people get more fixed in their knowledge, in their perspective, and they won't get off, like, they won't take new data in.
Yeah, they're very closed. But maybe that's like the fear of ideas that will sort of upset their view of the world. A lot of people don't like change because it's sort of they're happy like the way they are. And I think people don't want to take in more information, but yeah, if they're not that sure in themselves, maybe. Mm. They want to say, right, this is the world, I understand it, there's no room for interpretation, there's no way I'm wrong. And then that way people can be very fixed in their ideas. And I think that's a huge problem because they're unwilling to accept sort of changing ideas. And it's in all areas, actually. It's in, for instance, like physics and things, there's a big... there are a lot of concepts that keep on sort of undermining theories. The whole, like when Newtonian physics was found to be inaccurate. And there was... Everyone suddenly realised that all they believed in for the past, I don't know, however long they've been working in it, may not actually be correct. And people really feel scared by that, I think.
Why do they feel scared?
Well, their beliefs, their understanding of the world is found to be wrong, maybe.
But why is that scary? I mean, I agree with you, people find that, but I'm just curious, like, for inquiry, like, why do people find that scary?
I think people find it really reassuring when sort of saying, I understand something.
We have about 10 seconds to wrap up this part of it.
Cool.
If you have a pressing comment, please
right.
Finish it. But we're also going to